Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, home of the ambitious upstart, the only site which doesn't say, hey, you know what? You might be intimidated by the success of the people who I bring on, so I should lower my standards. You might feel that someone who's made it is too tough a model to live up to, so I'm going to just bring on people who started companies. No, I believe in you. I believe, frankly, in myself. I believe that we should not be talked down to. We have to have winners on here, people who are doing things with their lives. And in these stories, I try to find one little area at least that I know that many people in my audience are wrestling with so that you can see, you can learn, and you can grow based on this interview. So here's what I got for you today. I got a guy who used to have way too many projects going on. Do you ever have that? Maybe you have too many ideas. Maybe you just have two ideas and you can't figure out which way to go and you're stumbling because of it. Well, today's guest had lots of ideas and he's very good at executing, and he ended up having to focus on just one. Wait till you see what happened when he focused on just one and how he got there. That's one of the most important parts of this interview for me and for you. His name is Ned Dwyer. He is the founder of Elto. They're Elto.com, a site where you can hire developers and designers to make small tweaks to your site. For example, we at Mixergy, we needed a small change to our homepage. I hated that the input box where people put their email address was like this big. I wanted it shortened up, and I wanted that submit button moved up right next to the input box. I went to his site, and for $35, Elto fixed it for me. And that's what you see if you go to Mixergy.com now for the first time. It's because of Ned's site that we have that. So I want to find out how he built up his business, and I want to say it that it's, well, I need to say that it's all thanks to my buddy Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. He funds these interviews, and I hold up his mug as a way of saying thank you. If you're an entrepreneur who needs a lawyer, check out Scott. Ned, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
I did a lot of talking in that intro. We got to let you do more of the talking. Why don't we start off with this list of the things that you were doing before?
I guess I had a lot of jobs.
Can you rattle some off? I want people to see that this is not just I had a lot of jobs, which means you had three. You were a DJ, for example. What else?
I worked as a cleaner at a butcher. I was a waiter. I was a medical courier. I was a mechanic. I was a delivery driver. I was a marketing manager. I was a sales rep. I pushed supermarket trolleys. I delivered newspapers.
What's a CRM for nonprofits that you did?
I worked on a platform for helping not-for-profit organizations to sort of communicate with their members and manage their member list, kind of like a market automation, I guess, very early stage that.
And when I say you were a DJ, you weren't just doing it for fun. You were out there performing and you were making money as a DJ, right?
Yeah, we were making really good money there for a while. I remember some nights, you know, because we were DJing, but we were also throwing the parties and promoting them and getting people along. And I remember one night in particular, you know, walking out the door with 10 grand in my back pocket from one night, which was awesome.
So it is awesome. You're a DJ, which means you're center of attention, you're artistic, you're creative, you're making money, and you're able to do all these other things too. What is the problem with doing so many things?
So I guess like there are definitely benefits, but the problem is that you're so distracted that you can't give any one thing enough time to make it as big as it possibly could be. You know, like when I identified these different opportunities, I should have been out there just focusing on exploiting them to the max rather than trying to do too many things at once. I had a mentor, really great guy in Melbourne, who was watching me do too many things, and he said to me, you know, you might what's your goal? Like, what do you want to do? Like, what is there a dollar figure or and I was like, you know, I want to make money, I want to live well and not have to worry about any of that sort of things. And he said, you know, you can focus on one thing a year for the next 5 years, and you might turn each of those things into a $1 million company, and you might make $1 million. But if you go and focus on one thing for the next 5 years, the chances of you turning that one thing into a $5 million company are a lot greater. You've got a lot more time and to be able to focus on that to make that a reality.
All right, and later on, I'm going to see how close you got to that $1 million figure. I have a note here to ask you, but I need to build rapport with the guests before I can start prying into their finances. So why don't we continue with the story? Was Native Digital, the agency that you bought, was that the first time that you said, I'm going to focus, or were you still there a little diffused in your attention?
At the time, I kind of thought that was going to be the focus. You know, the agency let me work on it was kind of like a banner, and it meant that I could go out there and build one company, you know, hire people in that company to build projects and things like that. But after a while, what I realized was that, you know, we're going from client to client and project to project within the agency itself. And so it kind of let me indulge in not focusing, you know, indulge in working on 10 different things at once. The benefit of working on those 10 different things at once is that they often, more often than not, they actually make money. So it wasn't too bad, but, you know, we would still get distracted because we kind of built our own products as well. And we never able to give those products enough juice to turn into a big business.
I see. So can you give me an example of the kind of project that you were doing at Native Digital?
So I guess a client project, you know, we wrote digital strategy for eBay in Australia. We built a Facebook application for brands around Australia, iPhone applications and things like that. It was quite diverse.
Here's one. A client came to you, this is before Instagram had video, and said, I would like to build the Instagram of video. This was 2011. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was an interesting project. So a client came to us and wanted us to build basically a version of Instagram, but for video. So you could shoot it, their clients could, their users, their customers could shoot a small video, apply some filters, preset filters, and then upload it to YouTube and share it with their friends. And the idea was that they would create something crazy and wacky, and then the people would vote and someone would win a great big prize from it.
Okay.
And it was a really ambitious project. You know, it was probably one of the biggest ones we'd worked on where, you know, there was a website with like all this video encoding, and then we had an Android app and an iPhone app and had to display it in multiple different formats, multiple different browsers. And it was a cool project, but it didn't go so well, actually. Well, I think we were a little bit stretched at the time. We were working on too many things, and we kind of overreached in terms of our technical capability, I think. And what ended up happening was that the project just ran over time and over budget. And, there was eight of us working on that project at one time. One of the developers who was leading the project burned out and dropped out completely. And then I had to kind of pick up the pieces, and it just turned into a money pit. I think the thing that I learned from that was one about, I guess, you know, bringing in scope on any project to make it simpler, to try and get a bit more lean around it. You know, launching so many different platforms at the same time for something so ambitious was crazy. But it made me realize that I don't really want to work in the ad game or the digital agency game anymore. Because, you know, That project we poured our heart into, you know, it went live, and it was live and people were using it for all of 4 or 6 weeks. And people loved it when they were using it, and the agency loved it, and everyone was crazy about it. But then it disappeared off the face of the planet, and nobody will see that thing again. And it's kind of like, now it's just a story that I get to tell you about this thing that I built, which was cool. But we lost a lot of money on it, and that kind of sucks. So I think that kind of made me realize I want to just find one project, one idea, one app or business or whatever it is, and just focus on that, you know, round that out for a long time.
You know, in a minute, I'm going to ask you to hang up and I'll call you back because we're getting kind of a slow connection here. But let me continue here for a moment more. That what I want to understand is, was it easy to go from having an even more diverse collection of interests and work to something like Native Digital, which is still not super focused, but more focused? Or was it just a natural evolution? Because I'm thinking of the person who's listening, who's saying, I have a lot of projects and I need to narrow it. Is it going to be as easy as making a decision like that? Or what did you have to go through to get to focus on one company, if not yet on one project in this part of the story?
So I guess my my story was, I guess, working out what I ultimately wanted to be doing, which was running, a web-based business, and this is before native. And I had worked on a couple of things, but none of them had really gone very far. And I think part of the problem that I identified was that I wasn't technical, and that I couldn't really attract a great technical co-founder, which everyone, you know, everyone has this problem. And so my goal was to go and in a year's time, move to San Francisco. This is back in 2010, move to San Francisco and get a job at Twitter or Facebook or some tech company in marketing or biz dev. And then I would meet the co-founder of my dreams, because that's really where they're going to be versus in Melbourne. And that was my path. And once I sort of had made that decision, and then I was going to go on and start a company. And once I sort of made that decision, I was kind of like then looking for opportunities that would help me get there. And I basically turned away every opportunity that was not going to help me get there. I was trying to create focus. And so that's, I guess, when I stepped into taking over the agency, which would allow me to get experience in working with brands that, you know, people like Twitter or Facebook might recognize, like eBay and that kind of thing.
I see. Are you telling me that you were working for this agency and that's how you ended up? That going to this agency was your place to find your co-founder, your place to find that one business that you were going to work on forever or for a few years, and that's where you ended up liking the agency and you bought it out from the founder. Is that what happened?
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was the guy that had run the agency wasn't really working on it anymore. He was in New York working on startups. A good friend of mine, Nick Crocker.
Nick Crocker, yes. I was hoping actually you were going to say that he was in town, but he's not. Okay.
He's here at the end of the month. And so I wasn't really doing all that much with it. And so for me, I kind of saw it as a vehicle to help me get to my goal. And so I initially was just, working with the clients within that agency and then saw that there was actually opportunity there to make some money and to achieve my goal. So I started to build it up and hire more people. And it allowed me to hire developers to build out my ideas.
If you weren't a developer yourself and you were someone in need of a co-founder, how were you able to lead a collection of developers? How were you able to take over a project like that Instagram for video when your developer left?
I think I've always just been really curious about, technology and about programming and that kind of thing. Never gone too far down the rabbit hole of actually learning to program.
Okay.
Realized that that's just not going to be me, but I think I was just a voracious reader, would always read up on all the technology that was going to be involved and asked everyone so many questions and kind of, I guess, ingrained myself in with a community of guys that were all developers. And so I think, if you're curious enough and you're asking enough of these questions, you kind of pick up a bunch of things off by osmosis and you can ask people that have done it before. I was a shameless networker, so if I needed to go out there and find someone that had done something similar, I wouldn't be afraid to pick up the phone and call someone to get some help.
Your connection, by the way, hang up now and call you back, but your connection is eight. No, don't. Your connection is aces. Did you disappear? No, you're good. What did you do after I said I'm going to ask you to hang up? Because now you're looking great.
I put my thumbs up. And
that was
and
it. You didn't stop anything in the background. All right. From now on, I'm going to complain about the internet connection before doing anything about it and see if that works. All right. So I think I'm getting it now. Ned, what you're saying is you came to this realization that you needed to focus. You went to work at a digital agency as a way of getting towards that focus, and you thought the digital agency that owning it was going to give you that focus. So the answer for you, if I'm getting it right, is you just decided, I'm not going to live like this anymore where I do a million different things fairly well. I'm going to do one thing exceptionally well. Yeah. And you cut off all other alternatives. You moved to San Francisco. You didn't allow yourself to get caught up in starting lots of little projects here. You forced yourself to look for a company like Twitter or a digital agency to work for. That's the big move.
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
Had to say to yourself, hey, now, Ned, don't you get carried away with this side project?
Yeah, I always had to say that to myself.
Okay. And it's like an alcoholic. You always have to say to yourself, no, don't have that drink. You have to stay sober. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
You always had people coming up and offering you a drink, to use that metaphor. You always had people coming up and saying, I've got this great idea. or I've seen this thing and I reckon we can make some money here. Or I remember once my accountant called me in for a meeting. It was on Christmas Eve, and he was like, "We've got this. We're going to build Facebook, but it's for churches, and people will pay for it." And you know, constantly getting pitched crazy ideas, some better than others,
and you have to say no.
Have to say no.
We should maybe start a 12-step program for people who cannot say no, and a group for them to meet. You know. And focus. And I thought coming into this interview that maybe I was forcing my need, which is to give the audience a story about focus, onto your story, and that maybe this didn't really fit. Then I saw your Skype profile in preparation for this interview, and where it says status, your status is focus, and where there's a place for an image, the image is a black and white picture of you with lasers coming out of one laser coming out of each eye, and they're red to just emphasize, "I am Mr. Focus." Why do you do that?
To do it on Skype, part of the reason I do it on Skype is so people aren't, you know, distracting me from what I'm doing, and only get contacted when people actually really need something. Make them double think before they just give me some random message. I'd like to think that I'm fairly focused. I think, you know, everyone sort of wavers, you know, and I have times that I'm better than others. But I just know how important it is, because I was so, in my, you know, early 20s, I was so distracted constantly by new ideas and new projects and new jobs. And, you know, I had to go back to uni a second time because I didn't finish the first time and things like that, because I was just, bright, shiny things would drag me around.
Philosophically, though, before I get into how you moved further and started this business, philosophically, one of your investors at Elto is Matt Mitskovitz, who started SitePoint, and then from there he started 99 Designs, and from SitePoint he also launched Flippa, and he's done other things. He's a guy who's both focused and launches multiple companies. What do you think the difference is between the way he runs things and the way that you do now and the way that you did before? Is there a middle ground? What's going on there?
Yeah. So I think it's about, finishing what you started and setting up a way for that project to bond without you needing to be in it. And I think Matt's done that really well in that, he brought on a partner in SitePoint who was able to keep that business going, and then when 99 Designs needed the juice, you know, he could get that off the ground, and it's clearly standing on its own 2 feet now. And so, you know, he's working on Hired.com, and once Hired.com is to a certain point, he doesn't need to be involved in it. For me, you know, the ABF Digital is still running, it's still there, and it's actually doing better than with me not working on
it. You still own the agency?
When I was, you know, brought on a partner. Yeah. I brought on a partner to take it over, and it's been going really well. And so my time commitment to that is, you know, a Skype call once, maybe sometimes twice a month. But I don't consider that a distraction because it's so focused. And Paul Graham, you know, has this thing where it's like, you know, the thing that you should, when you're in the shower, whatever idea you're working on, that's the most important, that's the thing that's going to bubble to the top of your mind. And so for me, every day, that's definitely tweaky.com. So
Elto. Renamed Elto, right. Same company, renamed. We're going to get into why it's named Elto in a moment. But first, I got to say thank you to Scott. And, you know, in a past sponsorship message for Scott, I realized I shouldn't be promoting Scott. What I should do is at least telling a story, because stories are more interesting, more engaging, more memorable. So here goes. I noticed, actually, the other day I had a friend over, and I asked him, "Who are you using for a law firm?" And he told me about one of the top firms. I'm not going to say which one. And he goes, "You know, I don't know what it's going to cost me, but it's going to be expensive." So I said, How are you signing up for a law firm and you don't know what it's going to cost you? Doesn't that worry you?" And he said, "Well, I got investors. It's going to come out of the money that I get from investors. You're not going to charge me anything until I raised $500,000. And at that point, I have to pay. And at that point, I could deal with it because the money will come from there." If you are someone who can say, "Once I have $500,000 in the bank from investors and I can spend whatever the hell the lawyer is going to charge me," There are tons of really big law firms, especially here in San Francisco, also in Seattle and in every major city, who are going to be very happy to take your money once you get it. And if you don't care about counting pennies, they're going to be even happier to have you in there. And they have nice conference rooms with good coffee. But if you're not at that position, and if you do like to watch your money, and you still want a lawyer who's plugged in, still want a lawyer who gets the startup world, that's when you call Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. In fact, you don't even have to call him. I know I don't like to pick up the phone unless I absolutely have to. You could just email him. I'll give you his email address. It's scott@walkercorporatelaw.com. So if you're looking for a lawyer and that's who you are, someone who wants a person here in Silicon Valley, a person who's plugged in, but one who has a reasonable handle on costs, call Scott or just go to walkercorporatelaw.com. Ned, you're a salesman. What do you think of that pitch? A story as opposed to a sponsored message?
I think that's pretty compelling. I think it's pretty compelling. And I think people that have, you know, dealt with lawyers before, you know, everyone has experienced that. You know, the bill shock from a lawyer of, we had the other day, we got a $500 bill for December. And I was going back through, I was going, what was this bill for? And realized that, you know, there was an email that I got sent. Is this okay? And I replied, yes. And there's that $500 bill.
That's $500. You know what? At that point, it becomes...
We're definitely going to be talking about that.
Sorry?
We're definitely going to be talking about it, that's for sure.
You know what? It's not so much even the $500, though that's expensive. It's that I start to feel like I can't just talk to you unless there's a meter running. And so we're not friends. This whole idea that we're friends and you're chatting and you care about my life, it starts to feel fake to me because $500 is what you're billing me for an email. All right. Well, thanks for that story. Let's move on now. Now you realize I can't continue to build the Instagram of video and the Instagram of whatever someone comes up to me with. I have to focus on one thing. Where do you get the idea that becomes this obsession for you?
So I guess the idea came at me from a couple of different angles. Mm-hmm. You know, one, so in what Elto is, you know, it's a marketplace of developers and some designers and marketers that have curated from all around the world. And we know that they're really qualified and the best at the job. And our project managers work with you to sort of, I guess, define what it is that you need to get done. So you want to make your site mobile responsive or you want to fix a form. And we break that down into tweaks, which then get done by the developers.
Yes, I remember actually going in and saying, well, here are the 50 things that actually was, here are two things that I need. And I got an email back saying, all right, what you really have are two small tweaks, not one tweak, but two small ones, and they broke them out. Yes. So that's the project manager, all right?
That's by the project manager. So I guess that's kind of where it is now. But where it came from was that, you know, people were, when I was at the agency, you know, family and friends coming to us all the time that wanted to, they had an existing site and they wanted to, like, add a phone number on their contact form so that they could get people's number and they could call them back. Or actually I had a friend that wanted to add a Pinterest button to his blog. And you know, he'd gone to some other agency, and they wanted to charge him $300 or $400 or $500 to do it, and they were going to take 2 weeks. And I could understand because at Native, that's what it would cost. You know, we've got to charge you $150 to $200 an hour, and then we've got a producer who gets paid $100 an hour, and we've got accounts, we've got all these overheads. So we can't do a small change. Even if it's going to take me 5 minutes, I can't charge him for 5 minutes worth of work. Okay. So I guess that's sort of part of where it came from. You know, realizing that there's that problem out there for people that don't have big, deep pockets. And anyway, so I took the idea to Startup Weekend, pitched it on a Friday night. Everybody hated the idea, scrambled to pull a team together at the last minute and worked on it over the weekend. We ended up winning $5,000, which was great and kind of really validating. And I guess was a bit of pocket money as well that meant that, you know, hey, we can spend this on, you know, getting a decent design made for a site. And let's keep working on this idea. Maybe there's something there.
The idea was theme pivot. What, at its essence, that's what you called it at the time. At its essence, what was it about? So was it the same thing that it is today?
No, I mean, theme pivot was, we overthought that a lot. So theme pivot, it was kind of like 99 designs for WordPress.
Okay.
So the idea would be that we would, you'd install a plugin on your site, and we would suck down all your content and your theme and all that kind of stuff, and we'd spin it up on multiple different instances for multiple developers to work on your problem simultaneously. And it was cool, it's a cool idea, but then what would happen is they'd finish the jobs, they'd fix your form, and you would buy it. You'd click, yes, I'm happy with that person's work, and it would all get deployed instantly back to your own website.
That's pretty cool.
The problem with it, I guess, is one, like, it's really technically complex, and also it's very specific. It's just for WordPress, and if you're a target market of, you know, some small business owner selling coffee mugs in Tallahassee, you don't know what WordPress is, and you don't even know
what platform your site is built on. Is it on WordPress or is it on Drupal or Joomla or whatever? You don't know.
I've seen. Exactly.
Okay, so then why do you think people at the startup competition liked your idea?
I think it sounded like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it was so limited in terms of what it could be, it sounded like a great idea in terms of, you know, combining WordPress, you know, the most used website platform in the world. There's something like 60 million installs. And then also combining 99 Designs, which everyone knows the success of. 99 Designs also being from Melbourne. So I think that's kind of what resonated with people. And we also built sort of a cool bit of tech during the weekend as well, which is what we demoed, which was a completely off focus, but it was a way to take it. It automatically took a screenshot of a website, and then you could click on different things that you wanted to change and leave a comment and then share that with the developers that were going to do the work. And so people kind of like that, I think.
Kind of like Sketch, but built in.
Yeah, exactly like Sketch, but kind of more for the web than a separate app.
To get yourself going, you put together a landing page and started emailing people about it. And I'm actually looking here at the landing page as it looked at the time. It just says Theme Pivot. We make it easy to customize your website. Theme Pivot makes it easy to make small changes to your website. We're a marketplace of professional WordPress developers. Sign up to our mailing list and find out when we launch Theme Pivot Pty Limited. What does Pty, by the way, mean in Australia?
Proprietary Limited.
Proprietary Limited. Copyright 2012. So that's all that's on the page.
Yeah, super simple.
This is what you sent out. Was there anything yet built behind the scenes here, or was it just this landing page?
I think for the first few customers, there was nothing really behind it. It was kind of, we all just did it by email, kind of like a concierge service, I guess.
So as a guy who heard about this and needed a change, I would come, put my email address, I'd hit the submit button, which is very carefully labeled submit, and you would get my email, and we'd start talking, and I'd say, you know, Ned, what I need is, and I tell you what the issue is, and you tell me you can solve it, and how would I pay you?
PayPal.
Just PayPal the money over.
Just PayPal me the money. It's my personal PayPal account.
This is what won $5,000 at the competition.
Yeah.
Okay. This is like the ultimate MVP.
Yes, it was super MVP. I mean, we quickly then got onto building out, you know, more of a back-end sort of project management system and that kind of thing, because we knew that we were going to need to have some way to manage these people.
But the plugin didn't exist, the one that would suck in my theme and allow me to publish afterwards. That wasn't there yet.
Well, yeah, we spent about 3 months working on that, and we got it to work, but it was really unreliable, and there was just so much time and energy poured into this thing that was so complex that we kind of went, you know, do we need to build this? Maybe we'll come back to this later on. Like, let's just get out there and start marketing this thing and see if people like it. And then we can go and build complex plugins. Because I guess the plugin, the idea behind the plugin and multiple people working on your site at once, we were, I guess, thinking too much about it. We're like, customers are going to want to see the solution before they buy anything. And customers we're going to need to scrape their login. The customers aren't going to want to share their login details with some third-party developer that they haven't met yet. And so I guess we were just overthinking it, and now we have a lot better understanding because we've worked with so many customers now.
You told our pre-interviewer, here's what you said, a portion of the website sucked and that approach didn't work. And then I took a different approach, and a street fashion photography site responded, and she let us mess with her site.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that? What happened there?
So we really wanted to get customers, but I I think on some of my previous projects, I've been really quick to go out there and promote them throughout my Twitter and Facebook and tell everyone, you know, here's this new exciting thing that I'm working on. And, you know, I even have a friend of mine, he's a good friend, who said, you know, I'm going to collect all of your business cards because one day I feel like you're going to do something great.
Ooh.
Such a burn.
Yes.
Such a burn.
What do they call that? They call it a backhanded compliment. It's a compliment that hits you with the backhand on the way out.
That's it. Okay. That's it. And so, you know, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that anymore. So I wanted to go out to people outside of my networks to try and find these kind of people. So I would go out there and trawl through. I was like, we need to just choose a vertical and just target that. So I went, chose food bloggers. There's lots in Melbourne. And I would just pull up someone's website and then email them and go, hey, I looked at your site and this isn't great, or this can be fixed, or this is going to make things better, or whatever. But people don't like hearing that. They don't like hearing that their baby's ugly, you know?
Oh, you went out and you told them. Right, I forgot that. Yeah. You said, here are the issues I see with your site, and for $35 or whatever, I could fix them for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So super manual, and didn't get much results. And then basically we started contacting people and sort of looking at the fashion vertical, fashion bloggers and things like that, and said, we'll improve anything about your website. You just let us know what it is, and your first tweak's free. And that started to get a bit more results. And we'd spend a lot of time with those people.
You mean you would actively email people, but instead of – you just made a tweak to your presentation. Instead of saying, your site is ugly and here are the things I could fix, or your site could use these fixes and I'll do it for you, instead you said, if you have any small changes you need, then I will fix them for you at this price. That little change. Let me just also – we're kidding about, or we're giving you kind of a hard time, your past you, for having all these different ideas and reaching out to people and saying your baby's ugly. I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression. We're having fun looking at the past, but I believe what you did is the right thing to do, to talk to customers, to pitch it over and over. Frankly, I will pitch until my friends are pissed at me rather than sit in my hole at home and be too embarrassed to tell anyone what I'm working on. Screw that. What you've done is something that we should be honoring, we should be encouraging more people to do, and at the same time, it's fun that we could have fun at the past you's expense.
Hey, you know, I'm all about, you know, ripping through what I've done in the past, lots of stuff. And I think the big thing we learned from those two verticals we kind of went after afterwards was that bloggers aren't really our customers.
No. Why not?
Because they're not making any money from their website, so they're less likely to spend money on it. It's really more of a vanity thing in some ways. Mm-hmm. And unless you can help them make money on their site, which is kind of complex, then they're not going to spend money on it. Whereas, you know, now we sort of work with a lot of e-commerce companies, e-commerce stores, someone selling something online. And if we can say to them, you know, this change will actually mean more revenue for you, they're like, great, it's a no-brainer. You can we can show what the payoff is.
I actually don't even know what the number is. Is 35, 39, whatever it is. But the idea that you charge a small amount of money for a small tweak, that to me is one of the most compelling parts of your business. But I'm looking at an early version of your site here from, where is this, 2012, July 2012. And it just says, it says changes from $25, request a free quote. So it wasn't always this simple, small change for this small price. It was much more variable. How did you come to this decision to charge per tweak?
I guess the idea was that, you know, there's all these random projects out there and we kind of need an easy way to be able to tell people, to give them an idea of what it's going to cost, but also an easy way to project manage the project. To go out there and say, we'll tweak anything about your website, we kind of need to, you know, there are a lot of agencies out there, like, how is that any different to an agency? And so the $25 price point and being able to say per tweak, like, it kind of does two things. You know, let's just say, wow, these guys will do a project from $25. You know, maybe my project is only $25. That's a trivial amount of money. Like, I'll go and engage with these guys and find out what it's going to cost. But then by breaking it down into these, like, kind of tiny units of work where explaining to the customer and to the developer, you know, this is actually what needs to get done. It's not so vague anymore. I think part of it was, you know, my experience using other marketplaces. Like if you've been to, say, Odesk, for instance, you know, you go and put a job up there, or you see jobs in there that are like, I want a website. And there's like 100 people who replied and said, I'll build your website for $5. And they actually say, that's all that they say. There's no more detail to that. And so that's problematic because the customer is going to think, you know, has got a different idea about what a website is versus the developer is going to build it for $5. So that's kind of what that is. It's creating a detailed scope. It's exactly what we used to do with the agency.
I came to you guys and I said, my homepage has a sign that says, I did 800 interviews and give me your email address. And, you know, so I came to you guys and I said, can you change that from 800 to whatever the hell it was at the time, 905? And can you make the box a little wider? And can you move the submit button up next to the input box? Mm-hmm. How did you know that those are going to be two tweaks instead of one tweak or even three tweaks?
So I guess we looked at your site and you know, could tell that it was, I believe it's built in WordPress, am I right? But we could tell that it's built in WordPress, and so, you know, the project managers have all had experience in WordPress and most of the common platforms, and so they kind of know how long it's going to take and how much work it's going to be, and then, you know, break it down into those sort of small units.
Okay.
And we're learning so much over time. Like, this is kind of the great thing is, you know, when we first started, we thought everything was going to be bespoke. You know, everyone's request is unique. But after the first, you know, I don't know, like 2,000 or 3,000 projects, we kind of started to realize, you know, there's actually a lot of commonality here. If we can start to put them into common buckets, then we can make it easier for customers to know what they're can expect to pay.
Give an example of a bucket. What's a bucket that makes it easy for you guys to price?
There's two ones we do all the time. One is set up a shopping cart on a WordPress site. You know that, okay, cool, it's a WordPress site. It's going to have this plugin, and then we're going to need to style this page and that page, and we need to, you know, there's some security things we need to do there. Go, cool, that's five tweaks.
Those are five. So shopping cart from scratch is always five tweaks because you know the five different things you need to do. And you will even install the plugin for it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that includes everything. And the other one we do all the time is for Shopify stores. A lot of Shopify stores want to have currency converters on their store. And there's great documentation from Shopify about exactly how to do it. But if you don't have the time or the nous to actually do that, we'll do it. We do it all the time so we can say, cool, I know that's going to be three tweaks.
Gotcha. All right. Now I got a sense of where the idea came from, how it evolved by talking to customers one-on-one. You would email them out. You would say, hey, this is what I do. Many of them hated the first approach. Then you tweaked your promotion and you said, if you need anything, then I'll do that. Then they liked it. And then the pricing needed to be organized. I get all that. Let's talk about how you got customers beyond the talking to people one at a time. The next place that you got them, as I understand it, is the press release that you sent out in July of, I guess it was, what, 2012 or 2013?
2012. Sorry, it's 2012, yeah.
2012. I'm almost positive that's when it was, but I don't have it for sure. Okay. Yep. So why was that so effective for you?
You know, that was really great in terms of driving a lot of traffic, and it helped us to reach, I guess, some of our influencers. So we had guys like Jason Fried from 37 Signals tweeting about it. Jeffrey Zell wrote a blog post about it. And I guess it kind of just gave us a bit more legitimacy in the market. And so that sort of enabled us to go out and do other things like business development deals and things like that.
People actually look at press releases? Jason Fried doesn't sit and read a press release, does he?
No.
So how did he get to Jason Fried?
Well, so we hustled our butts off. You know, we got in front of the guys at the Next Web, and got them to write about us. We got in touch with the journalist at an Australian newspaper, a tech journalist who wrote about us, and then just hit as many blogs as we possibly could to get write-ups.
So when I have here in my notes, the press release is what did it. If we were to unpack it, we'd realize there's more to it. A lot of it is you guys reaching out to bloggers, hustling your butts off, as you said. You gave me a lot of different bloggers that you reached out to. Sometimes I understand the process better by looking at one, and then I can get what happened with the others. Is there one of these guys that you can just tell me how you got an article written about you in? Maybe it's the Next Web, or is it the local person?
I think I'm trying to think of the chronology because it was a little while ago, but I believe what happened with the Next Web was that we got the CEO, Z Kane, actually heard about Tweaky through someone and ended up coming and submitting a project. And didn't have as that many projects coming through at the time, so I was obviously across everyone that came through. And I saw his name come up and recognized who he was and immediately got in touch with him. And at first I said, how about we do this for free, you know, don't worry about it. And he was like, well, that wouldn't be ethical for me to do that. You know, all, you know, that's, which I, obviously that's a sign of who he is as a guy in terms of his honesty in professionalism. And that, but he said, look, I'll tell you what, I'll introduce you to someone and they, you can talk to them and perhaps they'll cover you. And that was Anthony Haar, and he ended up covering us. So I think it's like just trying to identify those angles. You know, it is hard. You've kind of got to go and read someone's blog. Hopefully you already know them. Work out what the angle is going to be for them. Like, why should they care about you? Why should they write about you?
It was also looking at who was buying from you and then following up with them. You recognized his domain name and you said, I know that guy. I know that company. We should talk to them.
Absolutely. You know, when you use Tweaky, Alto, now known as Alto.com, I made a note of it, and I had a spreadsheet, which was the Mixergy spreadsheet. And I knew that it wasn't the right time for us. It was so early stage for me to say, hey, I'd love to do an episode. But I kept that, and I was like, all right, cool, we'll come back to this at some point. This is going to be relevant.
I didn't know. I was wondering if you even noticed. I always tell people who start up working here at Mixergy, when we give them their email address, be very aware. People see that you're working here at Mixergy. Go the extra mile and help out. Just know that that we're being watched, you know? And I'm glad that you saw it. Why didn't you offer me a free tweak at the site? I don't have the Next Web's ethics.
I think you, we can do something. I do have a couple of ideas about your website, but at the time I thought that it was something I would let simmer because one, I wanted you to have an authentic experience on the site without me, you know, making it out to be more than it is or, you know, giving you special treatment or something like that. So you'd actually know what it was like to use the service. And part of it was like, well, I'm going to put that one in the bank. I'm going to come back to this. It's not right for us. It's not right for you. You know, for me to actually say, hey, we'd love to be on the show. It just would have been crazy because we hadn't actually achieved anything at that point. It was so early stage. Likewise, whenever I saw anyone that came on the same spreadsheet, actually, this, I'm giving you my secrets now. You know, it's like, well, my same spreadsheet has got a list of everyone that I knew personally who'd been on Mixergy. And
why?
My thought was, you know, one day it would be cool to come and do an episode, and I'll email all these people and I'll ask them to introduce me simultaneously to you.
Simultaneously, so that then I get. An intro or an email about you from four or five different people, and of course at that point I have to pay attention.
You can't ignore me. No. And then
I love that. That's such great thinking.
Unfortunately, the plan got destroyed by Noah Kagan, who just did it out of the blue without me even saying anything.
Oh, did he? I thought what happened was I emailed Matt. You guys were on Hacker News, and I think I emailed Matt Mitzkowitz, who I found out was an investor, and I said, are they ready? I forget, because I never want to email the entrepreneur and say, do you have any customers yet? And if you do, then you should be on. I need someone else to tell me, but I can't remember. One of the cool things about doing Mixergy is that there's so many people who've gotten to know me over the years that they know what to look out for, and they can tell me who I should interview. And hopefully that if you have something, you can reach out to also all these different people. All right. I got a sense now of what you did there. Let's go on to the next milestone. Let's see what it is. The next one is, 99 Designs, or SitePoint, excuse me, did something for you that helped propel your growth. What did SitePoint, a site that reaches a lot of web publishers, do?
So we did a couple of things there. This is just sort of small step. Each of these things has been relatively small step changes, by the way. None of them has really blown us out of the park. And this was kind of similar. You know, we sent an email out to SitePoint subscribers you know, because they're in the web development community and they understand this kind of stuff, and some of them will have the pain. And if they, you know, they might be able to do the tweaks themselves, so maybe they can be suppliers for us. But we thought they've probably also got family and friends that are bugging them all the time to make small changes to their site, and maybe they can tell their family and friends to come to Tweaky instead of using their services. But one of the more interesting ones was with Flippa.com, which is kind of part of SitePoint.
Mm-hmm. Spun off from SitePoint. It's the site where you can buy and sell websites.
Yeah. And so those guys put together a deal. We put together a deal with them where when somebody had purchased a website from somebody else and they needed help to move it to their own server, we would, for $25 or something like that, we would help them do all the transfer.
That's nothing.
Yeah, no. We were all about users at the time, so we were happy to do it for very little money. We lost money on all those customers.
I was going to say.
We learned a couple of things there. One, you know, it's all about finding the customers at the right time, like when they're actually ready to make the purchase or when they actually need our help the most. If they just bought a website, they've never owned a website or a web business before, they kind of need someone to help them. So we could help them do that transfer. The second thing I guess we learned was that, you know, not all customers are created equal in terms of, you know, some customers you get or some leads you get, and you're happy to spend a bit of money to get that lead in. But if you look at the lifetime value of that customer, maybe they're not going to spend any more money, or you're not going to get that money back. So I guess that was sort of some of the learnings we had.
So Ned, I understand that at $25 to move them, it seems so simple, but you're losing money there, and you're also asking for a world of pain. But did those customers come back enough to want tweaks to their sites, considering that it's brand new sites, that someone else built it? I would imagine they would. Was it worth it over the long run?
You know, there was a range of customers. Some did. Some came and wanted lots and lots of different things. Others didn't. And at the end of the day, the balance was probably about even for us. But, you know, the real benefit that came from that was just, we just needed customers. You know, I'd worked on web projects before in the past where we didn't have any users. And so you didn't know whether what you're building was actually worthwhile. And so until you've actually got people using it, giving you feedback, complaining about things, you know, telling their friends about other things. So I think that was really the benefit for us. You know, it was so early days.
I see. So, how did you get that partnership with Flippa? One of the things I admire about your company is Elto really partners with a lot of businesses, and we have to talk more about that later, but how did you get that initial one when you were a nobody?
So we actually raised an angel round, a seed round from the founders of 99 Designs and the founders of SitePoint. So that kind of made that easy.
Gotcha.
To have that conversation. That was a strategic decision to do that because we knew that we would be able to get access to this audience. But otherwise, we do have a lot of partnerships, and I'm a big believer in building out partnerships. Especially where it can be kind of a win-win. You know, one of our great partnerships and one of our great step-ups, I guess, was with Shopify.com.
Let's talk about how you got that. That was an interesting story.
That was a hard one. That was a difficult one. You know, it's all about finding the right angle. And with those guys, we didn't see anything coming from them. I tried to get in touch with their like senior management, their biz dev guys, and nothing really was happening. And then we put the Shopify logo on our website and said, you know, we tweak Shopify websites. That was up there for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then suddenly we had all these Shopify leads pouring in. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. You know, and they started pouring more and more. And we're like, wow, this is amazing. Not sure where these are coming from, but it's great. And eventually someone forwarded us an email which came from Shopify support. They'd heard about us. And when people were coming to them saying, can you add a currency converter to my website? They were saying, oh, yeah, these guys do that. Just go to these guys. And it was amazing. But I still couldn't get through to, like, the guys that actually made the decisions to sort of make them formal. Harley Finkelstein. So I was like, I got to the point where I was like, I want to send, I've got a check here. I've got like a referral check. Where do I send it to? And just through a little bit of hustling and some connections, I ended up getting intro to him and he realized what was happening and was happy to, you know, we jumped on a call and we talked about it more and worked out how we could work together better. And, uh, that's a great relationship for us, you know, because again, it's like people that need service at the right time.
What about the cake?
And the cake as well. I mean, that was kind of a last ditch effort.
This is before you talked to him, you came up with the cake idea?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had this, so I was like, they have to talk, how do I get them to talk to me without flying up to Ottawa and kicking their door in and giving them a big novelty check? Like, that was kind of my next idea. So I was like, how do I dial back from that? And so I had this idea of sending them a cake to say thanks, to say, particularly to the support guys, because, you know, they were sending us a heap of leads. And so I found this little cake shop in Ottawa, and they didn't have a website, or they had a website, but they didn't have any, you couldn't buy anything on there. You didn't know how much it cost. And I back and forth called them. It was like midnight my time to call them and said, I want a cake. And the cake is going to say, dear Lou at Shopify, thanks for all your support, the guys at tweaky.com. And there was so much back and forth, and I had to pay by calling and giving her my credit card details. It was really dodgy. And then a few days went by, and I didn't hear anything from the cake shop or from her. So I pinged the cake shop and said, hey, what's going on? And did it get sent? And she said, yeah, it got sent, but there was too much writing, so we had to cut it down. So it just says, thanks for the support.
That
could have been anybody. And so I had to email them and say, hey, did you get the cake? And they're like, oh, that was from you? Oh, thank you. That was delicious. It was amazing. We had no idea.
And then you got to talk to them. One of the nice things about Harley and, frankly, the Shopify team in general is they get to talk to a lot of people who are coming up, and they're doing so well, and they're getting so many people who hit them up for stuff that it's really easy at that point to just – to put up walls and to be jerks to people, but they're just super nice. I don't know if maybe it's the Canadian thing. Maybe it's that maybe they come from the development world that they come. I have no freaking idea what it comes from. I'm now making stuff up, but it's so good to hear that people who reach out to them when nobodies were treated well, so that now when you're doing well, you can feel like, they can. Now when you're doing well, you have a good story to share about them. You know what? I hesitated there for a moment because I keep saying that there was a point where you were a nobody. Did you feel like a nobody, or am I just looking back and saying, hey, this guy was nobody?
I still do feel like a nobody. You know, we've come a long way. We've still got so far to go. Even if you look at a company like Shopify, you know, they've got 80,000 customers. You know, they've just closed a $100 million round or $150 million in fundraising. They're absolutely killing it in terms of what they've achieved. The platform is amazing. So, you know, when you talk to a guy like Harley, you're in awe of what they've done, what they've built, and you realize like what a small partner you guys could potentially be for those guys. I do feel like that. And you know, every time we try and strike up a new business development relationship, you know, you're always having to sort of, I guess, talk about why they should even be having this conversation, because they're getting these calls all the time from companies much bigger than us.
I do feel like there is this place where we're nobodies and then where we're known. And when I was a nobody as an interviewer, it would take me multiple emails to get someone to say no to do an interview. Today, people reach out to me. People who I admire, people who I want to get to know will reach out to me. It's a world of difference when you break through that wall, and I feel like there is a wall. And so that's why I ask. Now I'm looking at your site, and I see that you've worked on there's a list of the platforms that you support, MailChimp, Shopify, WordPress. I'm looking at where your traffic's coming from. ThemeForest.net seems to be a big source of traffic for you. You're big with partnerships like this. Store Envy is another one, a competitor of Shopify in some ways. Help me understand, what do you do to build a partnership when you're not well known and when you don't have giant margins? Teach me so that we can pass that on to the audience.
You know, the biggest thing, I guess, was trying to identify two things. One was like people that had companies that have got customers that are the same customers as ours. So we have people that have got customers that have a website, hopefully it's an e-commerce site that we can tweak. You know, we can't really do much on like a Weebly site, for instance, but we can do lots on like Shopify or a WordPress website.
Why can't you do much on that other site?
For better or worse, I mean, Weebly's like really easy for the person that owns it. Just it's kind of like drag and drop. It's very easy to sort of tweak themselves, so they don't really need a third party. But that's also kind of a limitation because you can't. It means that it's not all that customizable. So if you want to build something kind of fancy, it's a little bit difficult.
Okay, so you want to make sure that they have your customers and that those customers have the ability to do what you do.
Well, whatever okay. we do, and I guess then the final thing is knowing that they're. Is identifying that they've actually got a pain point that we can solve. So, you know, one of the first things I do when I find a platform that I want to go and work for is I have a look at their support forums and I find out what are people asking about and what have they got documentation for. So, again, you know, Shopify is the example. You know, there's heaps of people in the forums all day, every day saying, how do I fix this and how do I move this around? And likewise, you know, they've got all these pages of documentation to do quite complicated implementation. So, I, you know, from there, I kind of go assume that they're probably getting lots of support queries around this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then think, well, you know, if we can help to plug some of that gap, then they're going to want to send us customers. And we're going to be able to help make their customers more loyal to that platform. You know, they don't need to leave to go somewhere else where they can get that done easily. And, you know, everyone wins. I guess that's kind of the secret to it. So there have definitely been times when I've kind of pinged people and said, hey, we would love to work together because I think you've got the right customers mm-hmm. for me. Let's do a deal. But it just doesn't work for them. You know, it's like I'm trying to think of an example of that now.
When it doesn't work for them, is it because of lack of money? Because you do pay affiliate commissions to Shopify, or is it something else?
I don't think the money, more often than not, the money doesn't even really come to it. Like it's a nice little...
I can't imagine that Shopify is going to live off of the whatever commission you pay because they're a huge company.
Yeah, that's right, of course. Yeah, it's a tiny amount of money. It's just nice to have a kickback. But when it doesn't work for them, I guess you know, they've got different ideas about how they might want to offer services themselves inside of their store. Like they might want to try and build a little marketplace themselves or something like that. Or maybe it's just not on their roadmap. It's just not a priority. You know, there's one big web company who I won't name, platform who I won't name, who didn't want to work with us because they didn't like to promote the idea that their platform needed developers. They needed external people to help you make their site better. So, you know, I can kind of see that as well.
What about this? I saw that one of the sources of traffic for you is sources of business is WordPress. So I went to WordPress.com and I did a search to figure out what WordPress is doing. And it seems like you come up in the support forums, but also there is a form on WordPress's support site that says, want to really dig into customizing your WordPress theme? We are partnered with Tweaky, which is the former name of Elto. A WordPress.com customization service, and they say for $35 they'll do custom tweaks. And then there's a form right there. How do you get that?
Again, like I think we just solved a problem, and that probably took 6 months to sort of pull off. You know, we basically worked with those guys to identify what is their problem, what are common problems that customers have, and how can we help you fix it. You know, WordPress.com is a great platform, but it's a little bit more restricted, I guess, than WordPress.org. You know, it's hosted, which is great, but it means that a lot of their customers are, you know, small business owners and bloggers who are really non-technical. And their model is not to tweak these things and do the code changes themselves. So how do they help these people get help? And to date, you know, those people have had nowhere to go. So I guess we're plugging that gap, which makes it a lot easier for them to.
But it's just picking up the phone. Is it seeing Matt Mullenweg at a WordCamp? Is it something else? Is it Matt Mitzkowitz calling him up?
I wish it was that easy. I'm trying to work out exactly how it happened. Now, I got an introduction from Mark Harbottle, who is the co-founder at 99 Designs with Matt.
I see.
He did an email introduction. They might have been talking about some stuff with 99 Designs at the time. And then I was in San Francisco, and so we met up and talked a lot, and then it ended up sort of coming together. So, I'm very, very glad that one came off.
What about when partnerships don't work out? You screwed up with a partner who was also an affiliate who was getting paid. Let's talk about what happened there.
So I can talk about that. So I won't name the partner.
Yes.
But you know, we had a quite a big partner who we're working with, and you know, it was again with that embedded briefing form. You know, it was on their website where people could submit a request for a quote, and we did a change on our platform, which meant that that form wasn't submitting the details through to us. And this was going on for like a week or two. And so we didn't pick it up. We actually got it. They reached out to us and said, hey, can we just catch up? Love to know what our numbers are looking like. You know, we've got a really great back-end dashboard so they can see all their numbers. But the best thing about that is they can actually see what their satisfaction ratings are from us. So they know how well we're treating their customers, which is kind of a big part of our sell, I think. But anyway, so they pinged us, and then I looked and realized that there was none coming in for like this period of time. And my jaw dropped, and I felt sick. And I called my co-founder, who was in Australia at the time, was like, what's going on? What are we going to do? And there was nowhere to recover it. And I basically had to call him, call his partner and say, I've got some bad news. You know, with all these leads that have come through, we haven't been able to get back to them and do anything with them. And it's our fault. And I feel terrible about it. And I'm not sure what to do. And I understand if you want to call this partnership off. But he was actually surprisingly calm about it and surprisingly understanding, possibly more understanding than I think I would be. And, you know, we really beat ourselves up about it. We put a bunch of things into place to stop that from happening again. Including, you know, putting our important partners up on a big dashboard so I can track what's coming in and I can see big discrepancies like that. But yeah, that was terrifying. That was terrifying. The positive that did come out of that is that, you know, when I thought that we completely screwed up, I thought, you know, they're not going to can us now. They're being polite. They're not going to can us now. But I know in about 2 or 3 weeks they're going to put someone else in and it's all over. But then we got a referral from the founder of that company to a major client, you know, 2 weeks later, who's we're still working with today. And I was like, wow, they mustn't hate us that much if they're sending it to this guy. So
I would put it off or want to put it off for a long time. And then I would offer them money. I'm sorry, I cost you money, but you didn't do any of that. You just couldn't.
I was trying to put it off. I was trying to get all my facts right. I was trying to work out there some way we could somehow get these leads from the database or something that come through in a weird way. But yeah, there was not much to it. I just had to face it head on and eat it, you know.
Hey, I'm looking at an old blog post here, someone else's site, March 1st, 2013, torquemag.io. They're showing a back-end page where you did migration from WordPress, migrate WordPress.org packages for $489, set up beautiful WordPress photo gallery, $78. You don't do that anymore, right? Now it's just per tweak.
No, we definitely do those things. So, I mean, the great thing about this is when I was talking before about this idea of us understanding the commonalities in the different tweaks we do is that, you know, set up a shopping cart on a WordPress site is now 5 tweaks. We now package that and you can buy that without need to talk to us. You can just go to Tweaky, you go to elto.com/services and search for WordPress and you can find that, set up a shopping cart and you can buy it right then and there. And so this is the services you just talked about, like migration services, because we've done them so many times, we know exactly how many tweaks they need to
be. I get that, but that's something that you can do over and over again. But when it comes to development work like this, you can get so carried away with all the different possible changes that people want to make. How do you know what you accept and what you just can never structure and should say no to?
We avoid anything that's overly complex. We try to stick to common platforms like WordPress and Shopify and BigCommerce and that kind of thing, which means that we understand, you know, pretty well what those platforms are. We'd never work on like a custom Ruby on Rails or a Django application. And so that gives us some idea. But you're right, like there are so many permutations. If someone comes to us, I had a customer that came to us the other day and wanted us to make a Shopify site look like and act like a Craigslist. That's, I couldn't understand why they would want to do that, but That's kind of a complex project. You know, there's a lot of design changes, a lot of functionality changes, and we sort of at that point we say, you know what, you need to go and find an agency or a developer, you know, your own developer. Versus, it's no longer just a small tweak. It's a complete overhaul.
So how do you know what is and what isn't? It's so hard to figure that out.
You know, that's I think that's just something we've learned over time. You know, we've worked with so many projects. We know when a project goes bad. You know, having run an agency as well, like I have a sense of what is kind of a big project. Part of it's also who the customer is. You know, if that customer that wanted that Craigslist site for Shopify had, we go back to them and say, you know, why do you want to do this? Like, what's the actual intent of this? That's really what we come down to. And they say, well, you know, it's actually just because I like the way that they show the search results. And we can go, oh, okay, cool. We can just do that for you.
I see. So I just tweak that, not give you the whole package.
Yeah. So I think it's really about trying to understand what their problem is versus just building things blindly. And that's kind of the power of having these project managers that work with someone on their project is to ask those hard questions. A common thing that we do for people is work on sliders for their homepage. You know, make your slider bigger, make it work on mobile, make it pink, make it fast, make it slow, whatever. But we know, like, we've got heaps of data which shows us that that sliders are terrible for conversion rates. And so we're like, if you're running an e-commerce site, you know, we're going to ask you, why do you want to do this? And tell me more about your business. And often we'll find out, you know, I've got lots of traffic, but it's not converting. We're like, great. How about we help you do something around that? Because there's 10 different things we can do to help you increase your conversion rate.
I just love your business. I mean, I don't know the business model behind it, but I do know my needs. And I remember when I first found out about it, I think it was on Hacker News, I immediately bookmarked it. And I said, I have these little changes. I don't want to spend a lot of money. And also, worse than not spending a lot of money, I don't want to get sucked into endless work on this. Just all I need is move that input box. All I need is make the number go from 800 to 900, whatever. I have a bunch of rapid-fire questions to ask you before we end, but first I want to congratulate one of my, not just fans, not just listeners, but a premium member, a Mixergy premium member, Steve Young. Steve Young took the Interview Your Heroes course where I teach people how to do this. One of the things I love is just getting to talk to entrepreneurs like this. It's more than just learning. It's also building relationships. Ned, you're gonna come to my house to play poker at some point, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And turns out we're neighbors. So there's so much to be gained from this, both business, relationships, and getting your name out there. That's why I do it. I did a course on how to do it. It's part of Mixergy Premium. Steve Young took that course. He recently started doing his own interview program for just mobile developers because he loves mobile apps. It's called Mobile App Chat. He's learning to build better apps for himself, which is one of his big goals. He is getting to know other developers. He's getting his name out there. And as a result of that, he ended up leaving his company recently. He did a celebration, I got him a drink to celebrate, and I'm really just so proud of how far he's come. It's just mobileappchat.com. You guys can go check him out. The big point is, it's not just me doing this. There's nothing fancy going on here. This freaking mic here costs you practically nothing. The software that I use to record costs maybe $20. It's Ecamm Call Recorder. I talk about how to do the whole thing, from the email that we send out to the process that we go through here. I used to do it all myself. I now say we because it's so compact. I can just hand someone else the instructions and say, here's how I edit. Here's what we do. Here's how we send out an email invitation. That's the way I do it. I pass it to other people on the team. If you want to do it too, you can just copy my whole freaking process and you can go to town on it. And hopefully you'll build something like Steve Young and get to know someone like Ned. That's the goal here. And that's just one course out of over 100 courses that are available at Mixergy Premium. And I urge you to go sign up before I get my senses about me and I decide that I'm going to sell these courses individually, because frankly, that one course alone is worth hundreds of dollars, or maybe in Steve Young's case, even thousands. Maybe it's just a life change for him. And I hope you go and sign up. What do you say, Ned?
Yeah, I mean, I have actually hit Steve up a couple of times for biz dev tips.
You know him?
Yeah, because he was at Smartshoot.
Yes.
I really liked what those guys were doing and went out to chat with them about some of the things that we were doing and see if there's any partnerships, and didn't really come together, but that's neither here nor there. But very switched on operator, and I would often go and ask him, just catch up and grab coffee and hit him up for tips on how I can do different things and get in to meet different people. And one of the things he told me was exactly what you're talking about, which is start interviewing people. Because it's an easy in to go and meet someone, and whether or not you're doing it from a biz dev perspective, like forget about that. You're just meeting them, but great things will come from it. I think that's sound advice.
Yeah, even if no one watches it, the fact that you got in to talk to them gets you pretty far. And frankly, it's never no one watching them. Often, the guy who's going to work for you, Ned, in the future is probably listening to this interview right now on the drive over. The woman who's going to end up being your CEO at some point in the future, the buyer of your company, the investor in your company, is listening to your interview and learning and getting to know you. And the reason I know it is someone from Crunch Fund happened to be over at another poker game at my house and said, "We heard that interview that you did with someone as we were investing, and you captured his personality, and that's what I care about." All right. So go to mixurgypremium.com. It will change your life. It will help you learn about all the different aspects of entrepreneurship. We don't focus on any one thing. We say, what you need? And I go out and I get the expert, and that expert teaches it. When it comes to doing interviews, I believe I'm the expert and I taught it. But there are other courses there taught by experts. And I promise you're going to love it. I promise you're going to want it. You're going to want me to increase prices. I promise that I should increase prices, but I don't know when. Until then, go to mixurgypremium.com. Sign up. I guarantee you will love it. Mixurgypremium.com. And you'll also be supporting all the research that goes into doing these great interviews. So in addition to the things you do for me, you're also helping out the community and helping me out. All right. Rapid fire questions. Company name used to be Tweaky. We've brought it up a few times, but I introduced you as the founder of Elto. Why?
So we had a trademark issue. You know, it's part of the reason. So we had to go and find a new name and a new brand. But it's also kind of turned out to be good timing, in terms of we're maturing a bit more. We're not just tweaking small things. Like you said, you know, there's some of our projects which are like $400 or $500. So that's why.
Fair. Revenue. How much?
So we're a private company, so we're not disclosing our revenue. But it's moving up and to the right, which everyone wants to see.
2013, over $500,000 in sales?
It would be... That's about accurate. It's probably about as much as I'd be happy to say.
Okay, I won't push anymore. I think at one point we chatted on Skype and I wrote it down, but I have something written down. I always want to be very careful not to reveal what people tell me in private, but push them in public to be as open as they can. Fair enough. Let's see what else. You told me before the interview started that you have used Mixergy as a lead gen source. How?
So I listen to Mixergy when I'm running and always find someone that had some link that I could use from a business development perspective. So one example was when I was at the agency, you interviewed a guy called Travis Ketchum, who's at contestdomination.com. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about building Facebook apps and things like that, but he was not technical. And we had also built a lot of Facebook apps and social apps. And so I was like, wow, that could potentially be a way that we could cross-promote. And so we got on a call and talked about that experience, which was great. And then later on, he's got also a really good affiliate marketer and has a large audience of people that need to tweak their contest domination plugin at the time. And so we were able to sort of work together there. Actually, we're working on something at the moment as well.
I do like Travis, and he's told me that good stuff came to him as a result of the interview. Final question. Actually, one other one after this. What would you tweak on Mixergy? You said you had a list of things that you think we should change.
You know, the biggest thing that I would tweak is to make your site more mobile responsive. If you go to the homepage right now, it's on just on that form, the email form, it's just like really big and blown up and you kind of have to zoom in. You can't really see it very well. We could make that a little bit neater. And also the blog posts, the blog posts, make the videos responsive so that people,
How much would you charge me to make that responsive? My price so that everyone else understands what your pricing is like.
I'm looking at the homepage. I think the homepage is probably 2 or 3 tweaks. Then having a look at your blog index, maybe that's another, maybe 3 or 4 tweaks. An individual page is maybe another 2 or 3 tweaks. So what's that a lot? Maybe 10 tweaks, so maybe like $390. The big thing, I guess, for you, what I would be looking at is you know, how many of your customers, how many people that are visiting your website are on mobile devices, and how well are those people converting to email lists, that sort of stuff, and then how well is your email converting into paid customers? Because then you could probably work out how much money you're losing by not catering to mobile devices. And is $390 enough, or is, you know, is that actually worthwhile, or is it not? And that's the kind of questions I'd be asking.
What do I need to give you in order for you to turn that homepage into more mobile responsive, into a mobile responsive page?
You would need to give us your login details for your site, and we'll spin up a staging environment to work on. And any specific, we'd have to ask you a couple of questions about exactly how you want it to look, and then give us a couple of days and we can be done.
And we do it all via email? No, we go to the site, I register, I tell you what I need. I already have an account.
Do it all through Tweaky.com.
Hey, at the top of the interview, I said that I paid $35. It might have been $39. It's
$39.
It's $39, so I screwed up at the top. Actually, I think that's pretty much it. If people want to sign up, they could just go over to Elto, right?
Elto.com.
Elto.com. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me on, Andrew. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.